This is the Bearcast, presented by Bird, Kulch & Ford. Bird, Kulch & Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoke and Grayson Grundhaver.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Bearcast on this Tuesday, June the 11th, 2024. Craig Smoke, Grayson Grundhaver, got Garrett Ross behind the scenes, and we are live in studio, as we always are, Tuesdays at 11:15 a.m. Join us here on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page, after the fact on all your favorite podcast platforms, and always there on the YouTube page as well. If you haven't already, please hit like and subscribe. That would go a long way for us as we just continue adding listeners and numbers. And we are counting down to the start of football season as we are now in that sweet spot of getting into June and have media days a month away and camps have started up. And so, Grayson, that's a lot of what we'll be talking about today. A new commit coming out of the first weekend of camps, and that'll be about most of the content, I think, for this episode is camp stuff, because that's just where we are on the calendar. Also get to your mailbag as well, but good to be back. I was away last week for a family funeral, and I guess my big takeaway was the thing I missed out on talking about was the anthracite uniforms that were debuted. We got a chance to talk about and kind of tease that there were some things on the way, and we got to talk about the first set of uniforms that were unveiled, but we had also mentioned specifically the word anthracite, I think, like 50 times in the lead-up to those. We didn't know that they were going to debut them so quickly. We thought they'd probably extend that into the season, because why not just do it all at once? But they dropped them just a few days later. I missed out on being able to talk about that, but I saw there was a big reaction to those. You know, mixed for sure on the first set, but I think those anthracite uniforms were about as unanimously approved as anything I've seen from the Baylor fan base in about 5 or 6 years now, it seems like.
Yeah, it's pretty funny because I actually missed out on talking about the anthracite jerseys as well, and I went an hour and a half by myself and did not mention the word anthracite one time in the entire podcast. I mean, we talked so much about the uniforms the week before, and we alluded to the fact that these were coming.
We told you what was coming, right, basically. Right. Yeah.
And this was the whole thing. We mentioned it the week we talked about the uniforms, the Baylor across the jersey, which they brought back, which looks phenomenal. I think most people's consensus is, why couldn't this be for every uniform package? Why couldn't they all look like this? They couldn't do it. Time constraints, they weren't able to get all of that done, but my goodness, it looks awesome. It's such a throwback. I think it's going to age really well. I just think it's one of those things that recruits love, and the players obviously love too, as we got to see kind of that live look in of, you know, Keytron Jackson, Richard Reese, Caden Jenkins, and Josh Cameron looking at the jerseys from Baylor football, and they were extremely excited. So yeah, I think it was well received, and the fan base loved it as well.
Yeah, and I think that was not the saving grace, but pretty close to it, just in terms of the original reaction and kind of how people were feeling about the base set. Even though I liked him, I said I liked him, mm-hmm. and I liked him a lot more than what we've seen the last few years. But then you added in that alternate, and I think that really kind of, you know, sewed it all up in a good way, the entire reveal. So good call to go ahead and release those when they did and kind of put a cherry on top and really – add a positive spin to what was otherwise just a very mixed, you know, sort of bag of reactions to the regular set of uniforms. But yeah, I think that was all explained as well of why aren't these ones with bear claws on them, and why does this not have Baylor on the chest? And Colt and a lot of others, I think, went around in circles discussing that, and I think we've explained kind of the situation there, but they've got something nice to work with. So 5 years from now, when they go back to redo them or whatever the contract states, maybe that black or that anthracite can be kind of the standard template with the tribute to the teams from about a decade ago, because that was really cool. That was a really cool set and a good way to round out the uniform unveil. So yeah, I missed that on that last week, but wanted to make mention of that because I thought they did a really good job of unveiling and just the design, the callback was very, very cool. So Baylor's going to look good on the football field as far as their threads go, and on the field as far as their actual talent and their execution and all of those things. That remains to be seen. But as far as talent goes for the future, that's what they're working on right now with these camps getting underway, an annual tradition in the summertime is having these camps and all the young prospects rolling through and throwing out offers. So I know they've got a commit to talk about. First things first, and Chase Collier, a wide receiver out of Florida, pledged to the Bears over the weekend, and that gives them closing in on 10 commits now for the class of 2025. But from the Bowles School in Jacksonville, he's number 9 overall. And after, you know, I guess a great official visit and just getting the itch to make his decision, it was Baylor for Chase Collier. So tell us about the young man from the Sunshine State and, you know, everything that comes with his commitment now.
Well, he becomes commit number 9 in the 2025 class, second wide receiver. He joins Ashton Jones out of Shadow Creek in that regard. This was one of those recruitments where it felt like Dallas Baker's role in his recruitment was just massive. Great relationship with him. Obviously, Chase is from Florida. Dallas Baker played football at Florida, obviously made it to the NFL as well. But their relationship, I think, was a huge part in this. And I think that's pretty obvious. When you get a kid from Florida who has never visited Baylor before, only got his offer about 2.5 weeks ago, and then he immediately commits when he's on campus, that tells you all you need to know about his relationship with the position coach and his relationship with the entire staff, Dave Aranda on through. So, yeah, I think the biggest thing with him is, you know, you're kind of looking for upside, I think, at the wide receiver position. Baylor's going to take quite a few in this class, but you need guys who have legit, not just, you know, it's tough to say NFL upside, but he does have NFL speed. He ran a 10.78 in the 100 meter, a 21.91 in the 200 meter, and he's over 6 foot tall. He's 6'1", 175. His numbers are interesting. He only had 571 yards and 6 touchdowns this year, but I will say he does play alongside a top 150 player in the entire country at the wide receiver position in the 2026 class, Naheem Burrows. And so they kind of both play a huge role in their offense. But I think Collier really flashed this year with his speed, ability after the catch, ball tracking ability, all of those things I think are reasons why Baylor wanted to take him, get him on campus, and eventually land him as quickly as they did. As far as offers go, he's got offers from Virginia, Boston College, Arkansas, Duke, Iowa, Tulane, Vanderbilt, Michigan State, Kansas. He was going to take trips to Michigan State and Kansas on officials, canceled both of those, locked in with Baylor, and now, you know, it's just kind of moving forward for the Bears as they probably need to take at least 2 more wide receivers in this class. But Collier gives them a nice second start to that, I would say.
Yeah, their wide receiving core, they've obviously thinned it out a little bit, just some natural attrition, pushing for that. Also, you look at who they have on campus now, and those young guys are now old guys, and even a Ketron Jackson, who seems like he should have 3 years left, he's at the tail end of his run, and so you just look across the board, and they're old at wide receiver in some ways, or unproven, and so, yeah, it's about time to start kind of restocking the cabinet, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at their roster, here's what Baylor has. Josh Cameron, Cameron Bonner, Micah Gifford, Jaden Porter. That's it for after this year. They're going to lose 5 receivers from this year's team, and all 5 of them are basically de facto starters, or at least in the 2 deep and going to play a big role this year. I don't have a ton of confidence in just a 4-person wide receiver room, especially when you're running an air raid scheme. Like, they have to bring in more talent. They're going to do that in this class. I also think they will hit the transfer portal as well next offseason. But I think a big thing that Baylor is able to sell right now at the wide receiver position is immediate playing time. And I think that's a big thing with a lot of the top targets that they have on their list, a lot of the top targets who will be visiting over the next 2 weeks, as well as they have multiple 4-star guys who will be on campus.
So Chase Collier, the latest commit, number 9 for Baylor football in 2025. And he joins Ashton Jones as their pair of wide receivers. You've got the quarterback in Edward Griffin, who committed just in the last couple of weeks. You've got a running back in Caden Knighton, who's been committed since February. O-lineman in Cash Courtney. Demetrius Brisbane as an athlete. He's been in the fold since January. And then on defense. I know Brisbane can be tabbed for defense, right?
Yeah, and quickly while we're here with Brisbane, I do want to bring up just quickly something about him. He was on his official visit this past weekend. He is going to start off at safety. That's what he was recruited for. But over the weekend, they did bring up him playing offense as well. So maybe a Travis Hunter type situation potentially. I wouldn't go into it reading it that way. Not many guys are able to do that. I would read it as he's going to be given the opportunity for them to see what he can do on offense, but they want him at safety right now. The other thing I do want to mention with him is he actually canceled his SMU official visit, which was supposed to start today. He's locked in with Baylor, so that's really big to have your four-star guy really completely locked into the program.
Yeah, and SMU losing Keelan Russell, their quarterback commit.
They're going after Ty Hawkins, who's TCU's quarterback commit now as well.
So that's a little bit of a domino effect potentially as well for SMU, just because, you know, that's a kind of a linchpin guy in a class, and so things start to shake up a little bit. And so, yeah, now it could have a domino effect. We'll see how far-reaching that is, but maybe SMU not as attractive now to Demetrius Brisbane as it was potentially, or others, but yeah, that's just good news regardless that he's limiting the amount of outside attention he's going to be giving, so to speak. So yeah, he's in an athlete spot, but leaning on defense. Colin Peacock, same thing. And then Brody Watley and Christopher Johnson, your two DNs. So that's where the class is, 5 offensive, 4 defensive, couple athletes that, you know, over time maybe that flip-flops around. But that's sort of where they are with a balanced class at the moment, now tipping towards the offense with the addition of another wide receiver. So that's good. At 9 now, I guess, you know, it's pretty wide open here. I mean, you took in all of the weekend and the visits, and you mentioned quite a few notes here, but I guess just what do people need to know? What do you want to talk about from the weekend, and what stands out and sticks out the most?
Goodness, I mean, we could be here for a long time talking about, because there's a lot of notes and things that I do think are very important off the weekend. So I guess let's start with a couple of the headliner guys. So you had Destrahan, Louisiana wide receiver, Philip Wright, he visited. And then you had Jasper, tight end, Keyote Armstrong, who also visited. I do want to mention Belleville defense lineman DJ Sanders was supposed to visit. He canceled his visit, as I reported on Sikkim 365 earlier last week. But these other two guys who are locked in, 4-star prospects, they both visited. I think both of their trips went really well. I would not call Baylor the leader for either of them. I think their recruitments are going to be, I don't even know the right word for it, but wild, I think, is an accurate term. I mean, Philip Wright is about to go visit Georgia, Michigan, and LSU. Like, it's tough to put Baylor in the lead category, but I think Baylor has been very consistent with him, and the fact that he could come in and play right away as a true freshman is very intriguing, I would say, for Philip Wright. As far as Keyote Armstrong goes, he's got a bunch of visits coming up, too. I think it's like Auburn, Texas A&M, Texas. He might even be visiting LSU as well. He's got a lot coming up, too. But in general, he's another one who, obviously, you'd love to land him. He's an NFL tight end, in my eyes, athletically. But again, tough to call Baylor the leader, even though I do think they made up a lot of ground as he gets ready to get into this June official visit time period, where he's going to take 4 or 5 more official visits before the end of the month. So those are two guys definitely to keep an eye on. I think kind of also in that category is Ridgepoint cornerback Bryson Weber. I think Baylor is more trending for him right now. He's a cornerback out of Ridgepoint. DK Kalu and Mason Dossett, current Baylor players, also played at Ridgepoint and were his player hosts over the weekend. I just think there was something about that, something about his relationship with Kevin Curtis. The fact that you look at what Baylor's done with guys like Carl Williams and Caden Jenkins early in their career, that's important to guys who are trying to figure out, okay, can I come in and play right away, especially for a 4-star prospect like Bryson Weber. So yeah, I think Baylor's in a good spot there. He does have a bunch of visits coming up with an early July decision trending for him as well, as he kind of gets ready for that coming up in the next couple weeks here. Outside of that, you know, I think Baylor is in a good spot with Fulcher edge Sheldon Rice, Sci Falls linebacker Caleb Burns, Klein Collins linebacker Trent Spence, and Kilgore cornerback Jaden Sanders. Those four I'm kind of looking at as four guys who would fit really well with the culture of the Baylor program. They also are pretty highly rated. I mean, all those guys are either high three stars or low four star type guys. I mean, guys who, again, I think fit athletically, fit positional need, and also just have a lot of interest in Baylor. And so I think Baylor's in a good spot with those guys and sort of trending in the right direction, I would say, after this visit, even though they did only technically land one commit after the weekend.
So is there a theme now, you'd say, this summer camp season with this Baylor staff? Is there anything kind of emerged as far as just sort of a, I guess I use the word theme, but I guess a focus of sorts outside of just landing guys? Is there a particular way they're handling their camps that's any different?
For visits or camps? Official visits or?
For either one.
Okay, so.
Is there anything stand out about the way they're kind of conducting business since everything's sort of shaken up this last year? They're kind of trying to take different approaches in certain mm-hmm. ways, whether it's the uniforms or it's the staff or it's the whatever. Is there anything kind of different already about how they're handling some of this recruiting stuff?
Right. I mean, I think as far as camps go, which we'll get to here in a little bit, I do think it's different because of the staff changeup. So guys are wanting to see different drills, right? Mason Miller's drills are not the same as Eric Mateos's drills. Right. And things along those lines, like you're doing different things. You're being asked to do very different things in the offense. Jake Spavital, that was really interesting. He's walking around looking at every quarterback, just staring at him, and I'm just sitting there watching, like trying to figure out what's this guy looking for. But he's just watching every single rep. He ended up offering a quarterback actually in the 2027 class, so that was intriguing as well. As far as visits go, you know, I think the big thing, my biggest takeaway is last year, multiple of their official visits, there were only about, you know, eight guys or six guys on their official visits, and that was in large part due to the smaller class and the smaller amount of scholarships available, whereas this year it's basically every single official visit weekend is probably going to have somewhere between 12 and 15 guys. So you're seeing an uptick there, but I do think that's more natural because of the scholarships available. Outside of that, it's just positions of need, right? I mean, you're trying to look at wide receiver, offensive line, edge, defensive line, those positions, linebacker, those are kind of focal points, I would say, in this class as we kind of move forward through June as we look at these various positions and the guys that they're recruiting at those positions.
Well, it sounds like they're in a good spot, and they got off to a good start so far. So Chase Collier, the latest into the fold, and again, nine commits, and yeah, it is a lot easier to sort of open things up and let them rip when you're not so confined or constrained by little scholarship numbers. So that'll be fun to see this summer as they expect to have what should be a full class, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, with all the changes we mentioned, just at wide receiver alone, you're going to need probably three or four guys. So, yeah, that's nice to know that this is going to be a much more active, you would think, recruiting season in general because of the fact that they're going to have room to have a much larger class. So that'll be fun because it did feel like they were sort of hamstrung at times last year with the lack of, I guess, freedom to have, you know, however many they were looking for in a number of guys. It was sort of a very small number from the get-go, and you had to wait for attrition there at the end to open it up and then attack the portal the way that they did. Right. So you're waiting almost to the last minute to finally have a little bit of flexibility. They have that from the start. So point being, that's a good thing to have in their case. So this first weekend, obviously made some good impressions, got this first commit. Now, how does this turn into the next event? What is sort of the schedule? What does that look like for the staff and for prospects and so on?
Right. So coming up this weekend, official visit weekend number two, there's quite a few notable guys. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I will say that I think there's some really important ones, and actually two really important guys in the Central Texas area. La Vega offense lineman, defense lineman Ethan Thompson, and then Lorena defense lineman Jackson Blackwell. Two guys who I think are very important for the staff, very important for this recruiting class. Both would fill a nose tackle position, which, as we've seen, has been just depleted with injuries, with inconsistent play, with just trying to find the right mixture of guys. And so these two guys, I think, are guys you could build around for the future of the defense, allowing you to continue to run the 3-4 defense to the highest level that you want to run it at. And they're local guys. Like, these are guys in your area who are just kind of fit the mold, right? I mean, both are powerlifting champs, like just crazy numbers that both these guys lift. I think both of them just really fit the culture at Baylor. They both, I believe, you know, grew up knowing Baylor, obviously, being around the Baylor program. So I think those are just two really important visitors for the interior of Baylor's defensive line. Outside of that, I believe I've counted this up. I think there's 5 4-star visitors coming this weekend. 4-star on either a composite ranking or one individual site. They are 4-star guys. And when you talk about that, you're looking at 3 wide receivers, a running back, and an edge prospect, all being in that 4-star territory. That makes this weekend really important, because I firmly believe edge and wide receiver are the two positions that I think are going to make or break this class. They have to land high-ceiling guys. They've really shot for the stars at both of those positions as far as their offers go, as far as the attention they've been giving prospects. Now they got to come out and find a way to land some of these guys. And so I think this weekend becomes really important for that reason. So those are kind of the main areas I'm looking at. There's a few other guys that I'm kind of eyeing as, you know, potential Baylor commits. I think there's a few guys that are leaning in Baylor's direction, and I do think Baylor's got a chance to land a few more commits after this weekend as well. I would also say that after this weekend, you're going to start seeing, I would say, I don't want to say pressure applied, but I will say if you go into the last weekend and you really, you know, want to commit to Baylor, but you haven't, I think that's where decisions kind of have to be made from some of these prospects, because if Baylor doesn't have commits going into that last weekend, they're going to have to go out and try to fill positions. So I think as we move forward through June to the early July timeline, you're going to see more guys commit pretty naturally as they kind of go on their official visits, rule schools out, figure out where their best fit is, and then eventually make their decision again at the end of June, early July. Multiple prospects have kind of that timeline on their radar.
So where do you think would be a good spot for them to be in by the end of the month as far as the number of commits?
So they were at 8 coming into the month of June. I anticipated double digits. So I think 18. 18 wow. is where I believe they should be at. And I'm not going to say by the end of June, because a lot of kids are like, I want to commit on July 4th. But early July, when those decisions are made, I think Baylor needs to have landed 10 commits in this class, or at least that's my expectation. That's where I think they should be. I think there's far too many guys on here who they have a lot of interest in, who the teams you're battling are, you know, Utah or Cal, and they're in the state of Texas, and I believe you should be winning those battles. I don't think you should be losing those battles very often. They've lost some battles to Oklahoma State, SMU, Texas Tech. They've also won their share fair of battles as well. But that's why I think this next month is so important, because you got to get these guys in on official visits and you got to land them. And so far, this Baylor staff has proven to be very good at that, but they got to prove it once again, because this 2025 class, as we've mentioned, is very important. So you got to find a way to win these battles and close things out.
What is kind of the feeling around the hot seat that Dave Aranda is very obviously on? Is that registering with prospects, or is it more of like, I'm committing to school, not to a coach? I have to ask that because it's obvious that's the case rolling in. Now, we know he's going to have to really stink up the joint for them to want to push him away. I mean, I think that's been pretty well established. Mac Rhodes wants him to succeed. We all want him to succeed. We all like Dave Aranda. It's just a matter of like, it's also like, you got to win football games ultimately. Has that played into, you think, any of their recruiting for the better, for the worse? How do you view that?
I think that prospects really like the direction the Baylor program is going in. That's kind of the common theme that I've been hearing, is that, oh yeah, this program is going to start trending in the right direction. And I think Dave Aranda's had to have very honest conversations with a lot of prospects kind of about that. But I do think that notion is probably more prevalent from other schools, right? Probably yeah. talking about it as far as, you know, saying Dave Aranda's on the hot seat, whereas this coach or that coach has, you know, lots of job security. And I do think that is a factor. And I mean, I think that part of that we probably saw with Adam Schoble, where he went to a school where Mike Gundy's been at Oklahoma State for ever and is going to be there till the end of time. And, you know, that's a tough decision made, and I think that that's a decision that, who knows, maybe you look back on and Dave Aranda's at Baylor for the long term, and then maybe it was a mistake. But I also think that that is going to matter for some prospects more than others. I do think in this day and age with the transfer portal, I do think that you want to go somewhere that makes you feel like it's home and the place that you really want to go to. And if Dave Aranda leaves and you decide Baylor's no longer the place for you, you can go make that decision in the transfer portal. But I think right now, I still think Baylor's in a pretty good spot. But I will also tell you that if Baylor is really bad this year and Dave Aranda gets fired, this class is going to completely fall apart. So it's kind of that you know, tug and pull, I guess you could say, of what could happen versus what is currently happening.
Yeah, I think that makes it a little bit of a strange deal for people to kind of embrace the class. So we'll see how that kind of goes, because you're on the one hand excited, but at the same time going like, okay, but all right, fast forward 6 months, where are we? Is this guy still in the fold? And that, yeah, is all going to depend on the field. So I think everything's set up for Dave Aranda to keep building on this thing and turn it into his vision of what he thinks the program should be. But they've forced themselves into a situation where it's like, but you got to win this year. Like, you've got to win this year. And depending on how many people can argue over that, I don't think like eight or else it's, you know, reasonable given what the external factors are, injuries and things like that. But yeah, you've got to put a good product out on the field. Mm-hmm. I think that's become very, very clear. You've pulled the uniform lever. You've now excited the fan base with that. You've got a reasonable schedule. I think everything's set up. I mean, other than just the actual play on the field, everything's set up for them to be one of the best teams in the Big 12 moving forward. But as we've seen the last couple of years, that's easier said than done. You got to go out and win games. So yeah, that'll be the ultimate deciding factor, but it's good to hear they've got some momentum on the recruiting trail, and obviously there's people that want them to do well, and I think if you can establish, too, like, you win games and we can go, okay, enough of the hot seat, like, Dave Aranda's here and he can actually sit and build it, that would go a long way with their recruiting classes as well.
It definitely would.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about the fact that they were so young last year, and that's, I think, really popping up on the recruiting trail this year, just the fact that Baylor played so many young guys this past season. I think that's being used very heavily and in a positive way for Baylor. They're going to give guys shots to play early if they earn it. But you're exactly right. I mean, the staff wants this recruiting class, in my eyes, to be a top 25 recruiting class. Now, if national rankings move some things and they end up being, you know, 34 or 33 and, you know, stuff like that, things like that do happen. But the expectation is the quality of it to be in that top 25 range. For that to happen, you have to win football games. And so right now they're trending really well, and they're doing a great job, and they got a lot of guys on campus who I think can make a – or coming in and visiting who I think would make a big impact on this roster going forward. But you got to go out and win football games, and you got to make sure that Dave Aranda continues to secure his job over the next few years, because in general, you know, players are going to be very open to transferring if your coach does leave. I mean, we've seen that at multiple places.
Yep. So good start to camp season and visit season and just all that comes with the summertime, a little bit of all that. And Chase Collier, welcome to the fold as well. Number 9 for the class of 2025. So second weekend coming up here for what, camps or visits? I'm getting backwards.
It's both.
Camps and visits.
So remember, they had the small official visit at the end of April. Right. There were only 4 prospects on campus, just kind of a random one that was added to the calendar. But then 3 straight in June official visits, also 3 straight camps, which are, of course, going to be mainly for younger prospects and offers to go out. But, yeah, I mean, it's the busiest time period for sure.
So week 2 of 3 coming up here this weekend. And more prospects and a lot more information will be coming your way over on Sikkim365.com. So if you haven't signed up to become a premium member, do that and get all the bells and whistles that come with that. But especially this time of year, a lot of recruiting news and camp news and things about the future as they try to restock the cabinets with talent. And that goes a long way. I mean, that's a big part of the lifeblood of your program is the stuff that gets done during the summertime. So nice to get Chase Collier into the fold. All right, so there's a good bit on that. There's more to check out over on the website. Is there anything else from the weekend that you wanted to add on to this? I mean, I know you got a preview that'll be a bit more thorough on, like, mm-hmm. the attendees and things like that coming up. But outside of that, anything else that we didn't touch on?
You know, I think the main things are just, again, the positions that I mentioned, the fact that it's headlined by real star power this week. And I mean, this is going to be a fun weekend and a fun test, I would say, for the Baylor staff. And this group, I feel like there's more guys who are maybe going to wait their recruitment out for a long time, as opposed to the previous weekend. It seems like a lot of guys that are pretty much going to be done with their recruiting in July. So it does change that a little bit. Only one commit this weekend as well, in Caden Knighton, the four-star running back out of Oklahoma, whereas last weekend there were five of the commits were on the visit as well. So Caden's got a job to do this weekend. He's got a lot of prospects to talk to and try to get to Baylor over the weekend. So, yeah, this is it's a good group. And then, obviously, the 21st, there's some more names that are being thrown around as well. That's going to be important, too. So we'll preview that weekend next week. But, yeah, that's pretty much it for official visits. I'll have more on the premium side. We got a lot of prospects that I've been kind of mentioning and talking about who are going to visit Baylor.
Let me ask you this as well, though. Saw Jalen Cooper with Kansas Graphics, and, you know, just is – in terms of guys they've got in the fold or guys they're eyeing, like, you know, so you, like, you get them in, you're like, all right, we got this guy, and then you turn your attention towards the next guy, but little do you know, like, there's other people knocking at the door of the guy mm-hmm. you got. Like, you're never really safe. There's always people luring, or not luring, but hanging around the chicken coop. So where are they in terms of the guys? Like, obviously you're not worried about Chase Collier 2 days after he commits, mm-hmm. but the other eight guys they've had in the fold now, just anything of note that you picked up on them, attention that they're getting, anything to be mindful of, you know, I guess what I'm getting at here as far as just protecting the commits that you have during this time of year.
Right. So Edward Griffin, Brody Watley, Christopher Johnson, Colin Peacock, and Demetrius Brisbane all visit last weekend,
right.
All locked in, all like after their visit, completely locked in. I think Brisbane was the only one where you're kind of like, okay, I know SMU is really pushing hard for him to try to get him back in the fold, but he canceled that official visit, which was huge. I mean, I think that's pretty telling on where he is at in his recruitment. Caden Knighton, completely locked in as well. He'll be visiting this weekend. We'll probably get more confirmation of that from the weekend. And then the last weekend, you have Ashton Jones and Cash Courtney. Cash is interesting. I know Eric Mateos has still been recruiting him hard at Arkansas. And remember, he committed when Eric Mateos was the offensive line coach for Baylor. Mm-hmm. So keep that in mind. I think that official visit will be huge for him to kind of even get to know Mason Miller even more and solidify things for him. But that one is interesting just because of that Eric Mateos connection. Right. And then Ashton Jones, he's been locked in for a long time. I know he got a Florida offer
a while ago.
Yeah, but that was a little while ago, and he hasn't scheduled anything. So I still think he's pretty much locked in. But I guess that last week and those two are maybe the two that you would look at and be, I guess, concerned about, even though Ashton's been the longest-term recruit that they've had.
Yeah, and Jalen Cooper's not a commit, but I saw him tweet that, and I was like, it just dawned in my head of like, oh, yeah, you also got to kind of play defense, too, because, you know, there's guys going and visiting potentially other schools or other schools are getting their ear, so.
I think the biggest thing on that is for – I hate saying another level of prospect because I think Jalen Cooper is a four-star prospect and, you know, schools are recruiting him very heavily. I think it's more the guys that are really trying to play their recruitment out. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Jalen Cooper's trying to take forever on his recruitment,
right, yeah.
Which means, you know, when these guys commit, whether it's in June or July, I mean, most of these guys are getting ready for their fall camp and getting ready to start, you know, high school football, and maybe more attention comes. But I think if they've taken official visits to those schools and then chose a specific one, then I think they're pretty locked in, aside from if another school, you know, that randomly comes in, like a Texas or an LSU, if they were,
right.
You know, something like that. But I think in general, most of these guys, when they make a decision, I think they're pretty much going to be locked in outside of a pretty select few, which has kind of been the trend for Baylor, right? I mean, it's like you lock in your class, those guys don't waver or leave, but there's like a handful where you're like, a little bit nervous about them, right? And we've seen that happen multiple times. Then we've also seen it go in Baylor's favor still, like Alex Foster did last year, where there was all that smoke about Texas, and he kept his commitment with Baylor, signed, and is on campus now. So it's kind of that push and pull, right?
Yeah, no, for sure. But, yeah, I just definitely wanted to check on that side of things because – as much as you're bringing in guys to visit, other schools are doing the same all over the country, and you've got guys that other people are interested in, and so it's just it's an interesting process how it all works. So, yeah, I just wanted to touch base on kind of where the heads are of their other commits, but they're in a good spot, obviously, so that's good news. Like, again, it seems like everything's shaping up pretty nicely in the big picture. You got some excitement building. I think everybody's got pretty realistic expectations for this team as far as not expecting them to, you know, go win 10 games or bust. It's like, hey, man, just be competitive, look like you know what you're doing out there, unlike last year a lot of the times, and be well coached and play hard and, you know, play together and play as, you know, best as you can. And if that results in 6 wins or that results in 9 wins, like, that's fine, but to see anything other than that, I think, would be a colossal disappointment. So, I like the direction that things are heading, and obviously there's some more momentum out there that they could really grab if they can win some games and then build off of that. So, for the time being, doing a great job as camp season and visit season gets underway. All right, so I think we've touched base on a lot of things. I know that basketball-wise, nothing to mention as far as recruiting from my standpoint, but did see Brittany Griner made her third Olympics team, so that's always a cool honor for anybody to go and represent Team USA in the Olympics. So I saw that for her in passing. She will head to the games and represent America. Beyond that, like, I didn't really have a whole lot of extracurricular notes. Like, there was nothing really NFL-wise. I've been looking around because it's just that time of year where it's just sort of the calm before the storm, but there's a lot of just different stuff sort of swirling and going on. So I'll be mindful to kind of loop that in as it beckons if there's, like, something with Keontae George and the NBA ranks or the NFL. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of news coming out of there that we can pass along as well. I guess Xavier Howard's been in the news, but I don't think we really want to talk about
not
him.
Not good side, yeah.
Yeah, don't know how much longer we'll be talking about him in an NFL career, honestly. But, beyond that, I think anything else you want to throw in the mix before we get into the mailbag here, I guess?
I still think Baylor basketball is going to add another big man soon in the near future out of the transfer portal. So I still think that's in the works. Baylor softball added a commit from Lily Walker, who is a Duke left-handed pitcher. She went 12-1 this past year with a 1.98 ERA, and she helped lead Duke to the Women's College World Series. So, I mean, she's a very good player, a very nice addition, and that's a program that obviously had a very nice turnaround this year. They're probably one of the better stories of Baylor athletics, I would say, during this past season. So nice to see them trying to build on that as well. I guess that's pretty much it. We're kind of in that period where it's all about football for the most part, I would say.
Yeah, and Media Day coming up in about a month, Media Days coming up in about a month from Las Vegas, so we'll have news there as well. I know anytime anything conference-related gets brought up, it, like, immediately turns to realignment. I said this on the show yesterday, and I do think that's a fun topic and everything like that, but when it comes to the Big 12 and whoever they could, you know, feasibly add or whatever money they can make, bottom line, this conference needs to win football games. Mm-hmm. I mean, pure and simple, basketball is great. They need to win football games. They need to have teams with an S in the end, be competitive in the national landscape and make waves and win early season non-con games.
Make the playoff
and not be kind of the little brother that gets bullied around. They got to start kind of pushing back a little bit. And I know we've seen Baylor do that at times a couple years ago, make some noise. K-State's made some noise. You know, Utah's made noise in the past. They needed to make a lot more now that they're in the Big 12, so on and so forth. But we are about to get into Media Day season here in the next few weeks. So I think that's exciting. That will obviously bring a lot of news and just a lot of topics that I touched on, from just the realignment landscape, this new era that starts this year with everybody moving into their new homes, where the money is right now and kind of how things are viewed. The Big 12 is a third or fourth league in the rankings right now, and obviously they could, without doing anything, be the third should things fall apart out east. But for the most part, I think while you know there, it's fun to say like, hey, let's add 17 more teams and have a 32 team. Big 12 needs to go out and win some football games this year, and that's the motto for Baylor as well. So that's the bottom line for me as we hit the summer months and the focus for Baylor, for this league, and for college football right now, the way it's headed. That's the most important thing.
What do you think the Big 12 needs to do this year as far as the college football playoff goes? Because like I saw earlier today, Andy Staples released his top 12, and he only had Kansas State in the field. Obviously, national media is going to do everything they can to keep the Big 12 out of having multiple teams in it. He also has five SEC teams, which tells you kind of all you need to know about that. But what would be your expectation? Is it two teams? Is it? I feel like two is probably the max this year. It feels like, at least.
And I think that two is going to be the max any year, and two is not even going to be a given any year. That's the thing. Like that's okay. I don't think that you're going to be guaranteed to have more than one in any given year. And so yeah, that's. What I mean, all this other stuff's fun, but like, if you really care about the conference or the health of college football and things like that, you can go add or subtract however many teams you want to. You got to go win football games. So they need a Utah and a K-State to be in the conference championship game, and both of them have maybe at most, like, one of them has two losses. Like, maybe. And even that, I think you're out of the playoff. Like, I think you're going to have two, like, I think you're going to have a team that's got, like, one loss and a team that's undefeated and they play in a close game, and that's what it's going to take for the Big 12 to get like two teams in most year. I think so. I mean,
to be in the top 12, because we've seen, I mean, yeah, multiple years where the Big 12 has three or four teams in the top 12. But is your mindset that if the Big 12 has a team at number 10 going into the last weekend, they'll just move them, like
for
do the
like
eye test?
Two losses for Tennessee. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think you have any room to think otherwise. I think everything that's happened pretty much proves that's the case, is like the direction of where the sort of power has shifted. We're already hearing the excuses from Andy Staples or whoever, you know, is echoing the comments that they hear. We're already hearing a ton about, well, what if there's a three-loss SEC team that's played, you know, like you're already hearing them set it up. They're already buttering you up to go and do it later on. And so, yeah, I think without a shadow of a doubt, if you're even on the border of maybe or may not making it, if you're in the Big 12, like you're probably not making it.
Do you think 11-2 gets in over 9-3?
It depends on what other teams do. 11-2 should get in over 9-3, but is it 11-2 like Arizona versus a 9-3 like Alabama,
Tennessee?
Mm-hmm. Like I think, depending on who their losses are to, they get in because of their reputation.
It's going to be really hard for the Big 12 to have more than
that's
one.
That's what I'm saying.
Team.
Like,
yeah,
all this other stuff is cool and it's fun to pet. Like, you got to go win football games, man. It's same thing for Dave Aranda and his job. Like, mm-hmm. like, so to me, the theme for this year when it comes to Baylor, when it comes to the Big 12, just in general, and I focus on that because that's what we focus on normally on the various shows, is you just got to go win football games. Yeah. Like, enough of the TV deal talk and the uniforms and all these other things. Like, that's just noise, man. If you don't go out and win some football games, then either the program's flipping or the conference is just going to, you know, drift further back in the pack of, you know, competing for national championships.
Yeah,
so I think you got to get two in there,
every
come
year.
Hell or high water mm-hmm. every year, and force two in there. And then if you carve out enough of a reputation for yourself or the league just gets competitive enough, maybe one day there's a year where you could get three. But I think that's going to be really, really difficult. I think you're hoping for two, but you're not guaranteed
that would
to.
Just take a lack of parity in the Big 12, yeah. which we never see. Like, if you're going to get
part
three
of the problem too, yeah.
Because if you're going to get three teams in, you basically need three teams that win, you know, at least go 10-2, and then you would need some help, obviously. But
when you got 16-team conferences now, that's easier said than done because you're not just beating up on each other. So that's got to be part of the hope. But, you know.
And you don't play everyone every year where everyone knows each other so well. Now the schedule can break your way and things like that. Like, I think Tech has the sixth easiest schedule of any Power 5 team this year, and that's just the way the schedule laid out for them this year. So, yeah, there's opportunities to take advantage of it, but it's an interesting conversation because you need to have two, like we've mentioned, and the hope would be, like you said, someday you could get three, or a couple years you could get three if everything shakes right. I don't think that'll be this year, though.
I don't think that'll be any year, honestly. I think it would have to be just a really wild year, like years down the road where you've built up some goodwill, where it's like, no, that's a really good league now. Like, they've done this and that. Like, Utah's really good. K-State's really good. Like, this third team's really – Oklahoma State's really, really good. But I think it would take a perfect storm for that to happen. I mean, what did that mock-up say? They had one team in there, right?
Yeah, and they but so they get the go. Four seeds. So you're getting a team with the bye.
And how many SEC teams were in there?
Yeah, so it's
five?
Five SEC
five
teams.
Five SEC versus it's, one Big 12.
And then it's three Big 10 teams. Then Notre Dame. And then, of course, you got to account for Boise State. And then the only ACC team is Florida State.
Yeah, so see, so it's already it. Rigged. So five teams from one league and one from another league.
And one from the ACC. And so that's one what I from mean. Two power leagues.
And that's my yeah. entire point. So, like, yeah. Just the thing being sort of where my head is at heading into this football season is the noise is great, but, man, you need to see some results out on the
for
field
sure.
for Baylor, for the Big 12. And that is important because that extends into every other topic of interest for people, whether it's, you know, what does this look like in 5 years or – what does the playoff really turn into for the, you know, the Big 12 or for or what does it look like? Does it become just a popularity contest? You got to force your votes. You got to force it by winning football games. And so that's where my focus is this year in a major way is just for the league, for the team. You got to win football games and let everything else fall where it may. But, yeah, I mean, that mock-up's a perfect example. Five teams from that one league, one from another. And that's what you're looking at, I think, if you're in the Big 12. So as it pertains to Baylor – you got to be not just good, but you got to be really good to get in the playoff.
Well, they would have been in the playoff the year with the Sugar Bowl because, obviously, they would have gotten the automatic bid. But Oklahoma State also would have been in that year.
That year they would have been in. But
for sure, like probably a top 8 seed. So.
Yeah, but not many more years besides that. We'd have to go and look, you know, go year by year. But
the hardest is that some of those years, I think – I forgot the year with Caleb Williams, it was Baylor, Oklahoma, and Oklahoma State. But the question is, if it's not Oklahoma, if it's like Kansas State, do they get the same treatment? And probably not.
Probably,
right?
Absolutely
so
not.
That's kind of that's the hard part because Texas and Oklahoma get, you know, a little bit of a, you know, they get some favoritism towards them compared to the other teams in the league. So you definitely need, you would need 12, you know, three teams to be no doubters in order to have that happen, which is tough.
I'm not holding my breath for three teams. I think to get two in would be a good year for this league. So we'll see. You know, Utah, K-State, Arizona, Iowa State, or Trinity are picks to be pretty good. I don't know about playoff teams. Utah, K-State look like they're the two best bets if you were placing money down on maybe making that happen. Certainly, somebody's going to get in, and those two would be the favorites the way it's looked at right now. Baylor would have to really have a huge turnaround to even enter that conversation. I don't think we're anywhere close to that, but they can certainly make some noise and create plenty of positive noise. I just don't think that they're playoff ready where they are right now. But it's going to be very interesting, the expanded playoff, the new teams all over the country being welcomed in. It's going to be a very, very interesting year. The video game's back. NIL's free for all. it's just a crazy time period in a totally new era starting like this year. I think specifically it's like this is the dawn of a new era. So it's going to be just incredibly intriguing for a variety of different reasons. All right, let's get into the mailbag. Start off with Ryan Allen Long. Greetings, Bearcast. A hard-hitting question for you. What are your plans for the summer? Cool vacation, just studying the Baylor roster until fall camp starts. Thanks. I'll hang up and listen.
Right, so a couple weeks ago, my wife and I actually drove up to Colorado, which was the first road trip that I've done since I was like 16, like a true road trip, right? 16 hours was the drive. I mean, that is a trek, and wow. It took its toll. It definitely takes its toll on you. I know I'm going to do it, obviously, when I have kids and things like that, but it was definitely different. So we did that, and then we're going to celebrate our anniversary in California at the beginning of July because right now, the month of June – not traveling anywhere, like too busy. But July gives you a little bit of time in there where you can potentially go on vacation and whatnot. So we're going to do that in San Diego. That's kind of our big trip.
Good deal. Yeah. San Diego, I've heard amazing things. I've never been myself, but I've always been told like that would be like the spot people would expect me to go to and love. So I need to make that happen. But yeah, nothing crazy for me. I just got back from a little bit of a break in Florida for a family funeral. That was good to see some family I hadn't seen in several years now at this point. And to say goodbye to my uncle, I got a little bit of a breather there. Be going to Vegas for a couple days here in a month for Big 12 Media Days. I don't know how much of a vacation that'll be. That's going to be work. But that'll be cool just to get out to Vegas. And then nothing major besides that. Just got a little bit of time off here and there, but I don't think I'm going to do anything too nuts. So, yeah, just going to be here for the ebbs and flows of summer with the show on YouTube and just doing our thing like normal. And then, you know, little pockets of, I guess, getting a breather here and there before all hell breaks loose in, you know, August or so. But, yeah, when we get to mid-July, there's a little bit of a lull after that. But it does feel like, okay, this is the start, really. Even though you get a little bit of time after that, it does feel like, all right, you're starting to ramp up. And that's only a month away. So going to try to just enjoy this time we have, although I know there's camps and everything else going on. Scotty B, the Baylor King, which Big 12 football stadium do you think will be the toughest to play in the new Big 12 going forward with no Texas and Oklahoma?
Ooh, I mean, I will say this right now. I don't know that it's the most daunting environment, but based on how it went in the Pac-12, it looks nearly impossible to win at Utah. Like, that does not happen very often. I think they lost last year there. I think it was to Oregon. Oregon, I think, put together just a crazy performance and beat them really badly. But in general, I think I went back and looked at Utah just, they don't lose at home in the non-conference. They hardly ever lose at home during conference play. And they've been super competitive, like top three in the Pac-12 pretty much every year for a while now. And so, that's definitely one of them. Oklahoma State will always be one of them. It's always a very tough to play place to play. So I would say those two are probably the two that stand out the most for me.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma State is a very tough place to play. That's been a constant now for a while. So I think that they definitely deserve mention. Utah, that's definitely an interesting new wrinkle to the fold. I would say I'm very interested by Texas Tech with their remodeling of the stadium. That's already a very feverish fan base to begin with, but you see like the changes in the construction that's been ongoing, and that really looks like it's going to be like a whole new world for them. So I think with, you know, them, they've got to win football games as well. You know, there's you know, a situation where you've had a lot of excitement built up, but there's also this reality of like you got to win football games, and they've been bowl eligible, but I think there's a feeling now in the new Big 12 of maybe they should make a little bit of a push. Don't know if that's the roster this year to do that or not, but I think with that stadium opening up, they'll have another element of excitement. And if you can, you know, just further add to that element, we know they've got the fan support. So yeah. I think that could be a really tough place to play, or tougher than normal place to play, because of just the added on, you know, accoutrements and whatnot.
I'm very curious about that, because last year we talked about them and we mentioned it multiple times, like, wow, this team is getting a lot of hype going into the season. And
I don't think they would say they probably got too much by the time it rolled around.
And then this year it's been pretty quiet, which is a very good thing. We'll see if that continues at Media Days. We'll see kind of how it goes there, but it's definitely been a big change for them from last year, where there was a lot of just talking and conversations about them being a playoff contender. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like pretty wild what was going on, and then they barely made a bowl game. So.
Yeah, they took advantage of it. I mean, it was smart, too, because if they had won more games, then that would have been like,
oh, for sure,
liftoff. But it just, I wouldn't say it backfired. It just did, it fizzled because they didn't have the team that really followed up with that. Right. They ended strong. So you got Taj Brooks back. I mean, they'll be in a good spot. But, yeah, I don't really know. You're definitely not like pegging them as like a dark horse contender or something like that the way you were a year ago, when that kind of seemed to be almost a trendy thing was like Texas Tech. They are lying a little bit quieter, so that'll probably bode well for them to, you know, surprise some people or just to be better than expected. So, yeah, I think that's probably good for them. Let's see here. But yeah, that stadium looks like it's going to be awesome when it's all said and done. So I would throw them in the mix. Big Cheese 83, do you think Baylor has any players that will be one of the top five best players at their position in the conference this season?
See, to me, when you're asking this question, you're basically asking, in some regards, for certain positions, if they're going to be all Big 12 types. Now, quarterback, that's different, of course. But I think at a position to be top five, I mean, the only one that truly comes to mind when you look at the roster just kind of as is Caden Jenkins. I do think he's going to be a top five cornerback in the league. I do not think it's outside the realm of possibility that he could be the best cornerback in the Big 12. I think he's absolutely talented enough to do that. Outside of that, though, I think you're just banking on, you know, kind of upside, right? So maybe a Ketron Jackson, maybe an Ashton Hawkins, maybe Daquan Finn is just freaking awesome. And maybe he comes from, you know, he played really good in the MAC, and maybe that translates to the Big 12, because if he puts up the numbers he put up in the MAC in the Big 12, then he's for sure going to be a top five quarterback in the Big 12. But I think that's about as far as I would go. I think there's some guys you can maybe look at and be like, hey, maybe if everything comes together. But I think those are the ones that are probably the most intriguing just from an upside standpoint and a point where they're going to get the ball a lot and have opportunities to make a lot of plays. Those are the ones that come to mind.
Wyatt Smith, Keyati Armstrong, what will it take to land this elite prospect? Large NIL offer, guaranteed early playing time, mere luck?
I mean, I think a lot of it is just, you know, how does Baylor do against the other schools that are recruiting him? I mean, NIL is a big thing. He's a top three tight end in the nation. So, I mean, yeah, he's going to go for a lot of NIL, and he's going to have a lot of interest. And the schools he's visiting, Auburn, LSU, Texas, and Texas A&M, are going to pull out all the stops. So I would definitely say that NIL is a big part of it. And I'm not going to say mere luck, because if you land a prospect like this, it is not lucky. It is you did everything you needed to land this guy, and you beat all these other programs, whether it's outbid them or hosted a better visit, or maybe he just falls in love with the Baylor program. Maybe, but it's going to take a lot to land him. He's a long shot. He is.
Who is on commitment watch out of the upcoming weekend group?
That's something I feel like that's probably more of a premium type conversation, but I will say that I think, you know, coming off the weekend, I think Baylor's in a, or coming into the weekend, I think Baylor's in a pretty good spot with La Vega offense lineman, defense lineman Ethan Thompson, Lorena defense lineman Jackson Blackwell, even though there's a lot of competition there, Aldean Nimitz linebacker Javar Thomas, and Byron Nelson cornerback Leo Almanza. I'll have more notes on this. I actually think Baylor's in a really good position this week, and I think there's a lot of guys who are visiting who really, really love the program. So yeah, I'll kind of leave it at that for now, but I mentioned a few names that I think Baylor's in a good spot with.
And also from Wyatt, when do you think we will hear about the last roster spot for the upcoming season? As always, thank you.
Yeah, so I might be moving it to more than one spot. Baylor's kind of looking around a little bit. I think they're looking at the offensive line. Some, as I posted this morning on the board, there might be looking for another offensive lineman to add. And then, yeah, there might be another thing that pops up here and there. But right now, I think that maybe one or two. I've kind of moved that number maybe to two just because of potentially looking at another offensive lineman to add to the roster. But if I know anything, I will post it on the board. Obviously, I've been doing that for, you know, the past few months now. So just kind of be on the lookout for that. I'll have updates as they come. But I do think by, you know, a little bit later in June, there should be an answer to kind of all the roster questions.
Bear Sack, with the new OC hires, who improved their team more for the 2024 season, Kansas or Baylor?
I mean, so this question is just about offensive coordinators. And to be clear, if you've watched Kansas, Kansas's offense is really not going to be about Jeff Grimes. It's going to be about Lance Leipold. So I don't think anything really changes for Kansas, to be honest with you. I think everything changes for Baylor. So therefore, I'm going to say Jake Spavital has improved their team more, because I do think his addition is going to matter more than Jeff Grimes' addition to Kansas, because he's just there to help Leipold continue to make that offense go, whereas Jake Spavital is coming in to make the Baylor offense go finally. You know what I mean? Since the 2021 season, it's kind of been lacking, and so that's kind of the difference there.
Yeah, I don't think Jeff Grimes is going to, like, drastically change what Kansas does. Andy Kotelnicki, who they had prior, who's now at Penn State, did things a little bit differently. I've seen people who think that, like, the wide receivers are going to be more involved now, which I don't know. Perhaps that's the case, but I don't feel like Jeff Grimes is, like, just Mr. Wide Receiver when he was here. No. So maybe that's wishful thinking, maybe not. But, yeah, I don't think he's going to be, like, the drastic change for KU's offense. So I would definitely say Jake Spavital as far as most improvement to their team. And I think the improvement for Kansas will come from, like, is Jalen Daniels healthy, or, you know, right, things like that, as opposed to play calling. Good luck to Grimes, though. I think he's in a perfect spot for getting back on track. Best guess now, which B running back gets the most carries per game this season?
Richard Reese.
Yeah, I would think Richard Reese, which is crazy after last year how little he got, but it seems like they're kind of revving him back up a little bit. So I would guess Richard Reese as well. It's just so quiet around Dom Richardson, and, you know, the other guys are pretty young. Pendergrass is, he'll catch as many as he probably gets carries-wise mm-hmm. when all is said and done.
I think Bryson Washington is kind of the wild card there. He had a really good spring and really impressed people, I think. But I do think, in general, it's going to be pretty spread out. I just think Richard's going to get the most carries because I do believe that I think he fits this offense better than he fit the last one. And I know Travis and I have argued about that. But I think, in general, I think the ability to get downhill and just sprint to the line as quickly as possible and burst through a hole quickly without having to wait for blocks to be set up, without having to really read the line, I think is going to end up benefiting Richard this season.
Can the Mavs find some solution at home to hold serve?
No.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think they can take game three just being at home, and, you know, they had a chance to take game two. They had a huge missed opportunity there. I think that was kind of the death knell for them. But I think they can make it interesting, but I don't have any hopes that they're going to win this series now at this point.
I think it's over in five. I think the Mavs will win one. It's a bad matchup. I mean, the fact that Boston can send so many guys out to guard Luka is just, it's too much. They have too many options, and I don't see it, especially with Porzingis playing the way that he is. My goodness.
Yeah, and Luka's basically doing it all on his own, so without a lot of help, like from his fellow superstar, which Kyrie's been a great member of the Mavs, but he needs to be a lot better than he has been. And even still, Boston's still just better as a team. So, yeah, Luka's doing his best, but I just don't think he's got the guys around him to match up player for player and just total team versus total team against a team like the Celtics.
And he's not putting together, like, epic. You know what I mean? Like, he's playing well, like he's doing his role.
Playing the best on the team.
But he needed to push this to, like, he needs to be averaging like 35 a game if they're going to have any chance. And that's not really what's happening.
Stuck on a deserted island and could only have one condiment. What is it?
Condiment?
Yeah, it's very random. Ketchup, I guess. I know there's an anti-ketchup crowd out there, but I'm not a big mayonnaise guy. I cannot stand it. I don't get into the relish game either. I don't know, maybe barbecue sauce would be the other alternative, maybe that one, but outside of that, I don't have any other ranch dressing, obviously.
I like ranch. Yeah, ranch,
I guess. Ranch
good.
Would probably be the one.
Hot honey, have you ever had hot honey?
It's good. I've had that, but it's not a go-to for me.
Yeah, I'm just a little nervous because deserted island, something hot is probably not the most not ideal. I'd probably go with ranch. It's probably the easiest.
But it's hot ranch because you're on a deserted island.
Jeez,
but
no kidding.
But yeah, if you had like a little mini fridge there, I think ranch would probably be the go-to for those leaves you're eating or whatever. But yeah, that's always a nice one. And other than that, yeah, it would only be like ketchup for me, so I'll stick with the ranch. Brent B. Bear, no disrespect to your co-host, but hopefully we can get another Grayson only Bearcast in the near future. Well, hey, my name's Craig, Brent. It's
poking
nice to
fun.
Meet you. I've been here a while, and maybe you'll get that. We'll see. But
it was a lot. It was an hour and a half of just talking about all these prospects. It was a journey, but we only do that when we need to. So we'll see if we have to do that in the future.
And the question, who out of the past weekend recruits did you expect to commit but did not?
You know, I think I was kind of on – I think some of these guys will commit, but I think the – in general, a lot of these guys still want to take some more visits, but I think that probably Klein Collins, linebacker Trent Spence, I think Baylor's in such a great spot with him. I think he's a great fit for what they're trying to do on the defensive side. I think he matches the culture really well. He's got two visits coming up, but I think ultimately Baylor's in a great spot to land him, and I would be very surprised if they did not, even though they didn't immediately following his visit.
Any changes plus or minus for this coming weekend official visit list?
Those will be posted on the website, and they actually have been. I added a four-star prospect I added him for the next weekend. But, yeah, the official visit that's up on the website right now, that's the official visit that I believe will be what's happening this weekend.
So thanks, Brian, for the question. Cute wink emoji, by the way, as well. Sikkim Bears, $23 sign. Biggest surprise this season will be?
Ooh. Do you have one immediately, Craig?
No, we started getting to these like big picture things, and I haven't really like sat and thought about all this stuff. So yeah, I know we're in that time of year where it's about, you know, kind of getting into these topics, but I haven't sat down and plotted out like my kind of top category things yet.
I'm gonna put the Baylor offense. That's gonna be my biggest surprise. I think it's going to shock some people how much better they are than they were a year ago.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a surprise I would consider that, but I don't think there's really anything else that makes sense as a huge surprise. So, yeah, I agree. I think the Baylor offense will be better. I don't know how much better the defense will be. I mean, it has to be better based on what they have done, but just to what degree, I don't think it can take as much of a leap as the offense could take as far as being a difference maker. So, yeah, probably the offense. Best game of the year will be?
I think the game at Utah in week two is one that I just feel like everyone's going to chalk that up as just this blowout by Utah. They're going to win by 100. They're going to put up whatever numbers they want and then forget that they barely beat Baylor last year, and Baylor was absolutely terrible, and they barely beat them. Really should have lost that game, to be honest with you. I think it being week two actually bodes well for Baylor this year. So I think that game is going to be – I think it's going to be a really good one. I'm not sitting here saying Baylor's going to win, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than some people think at this point in the offseason.
I'll say TCU just because that's typically like the wildest game on the schedule. Always some, you know, funny business going on there. So I think, too, with the lack of real rivalries, that's like one of the best rivalries in the Big 12 now. And so I think that's just going to continue to kind of feel that way. And so, yeah, I just think there's always elements for that to be an exciting contest. And now it's one of the premier rivalries in the Big 12. So give me Baylor, TCU. Can this be the year they finally snap the streak? I don't know. Sheesh. But
they need to.
I expect they'll wear cool uniforms for that game. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be a big to-do with the game.
That should be anthracite game.
Yeah. Is that when they're honoring the conference champs? Yes. So, you're like, that just feels like it's going to be made up to be a big thing, and they'll be primed for that. Best chance of being an All-American is?
Caden Jenkins.
Yeah, I think that's – I don't know that they have another candidate, honestly. I mean – maybe for honorable mentions or something, but I don't think there's anybody else that you're like talking all American conversation about right now. All American. No, I don't think there's anybody else that's really in the mix at the moment. But that would be an easy answer of Caden Jenkins. Not currently a starter or primary player, but will be by the end of the season is.
That's a good question. So someone who's not going to start early in the year, but then's going to come on late. Oh man, do you have a good one for this?
No, I do not. I'm trying to think of who's not a starter, primary player that is
just going to
all that notable. Yeah,
there really aren't that many. I think most of the guys are primary players are going to remain primary players, I guess.
Like Dawson Pendergrass would be a primary player still, even though he's not a starter. Yeah. So that's eliminating a lot of guys from the way I categorize that.
I think the best chance would be like a either a freshman or a young
Jayden Porter, maybe.
Maybe, or like Alex Foster on the defensive line if he just completely changes, you know, gets better and better as the year goes on and they play him late. Maybe if Colton Thomason doesn't start on the offensive line but then eventually works his way into that role and becomes a starter, I could see him doing that as well. But I think most of the guys you're going to know about early in the year are going to be the guys that impact games towards the end of the year as well. So I guess those are just some of my best guesses.
Yeah, like I said, Jayden Porter may be an example of that. Alex Foster would make sense. I think you kind of listed some of the guys.
I got one more that's kind of intriguing. I think at cornerback, I think LeVar Thornton is kind of an interesting one to keep an eye on. I think Tevin Williams and Chateau Reed will kind of man one of those positions next to Caden Jenkins for the most part. But neither of them were amazing last year, and I could see LeVar's talent really rising to the surface, and maybe he takes a job late in the year.
That's so possible. You say Chateau or Tevin across from
across from Caden. That's kind of my expectation at the moment, because I think Carl's going to stay at Star, with Kendrick, kind of rotating there. And so, but I do think LeVar, maybe by the end of the year as a redshirt freshman, maybe he steps into that role.
Yeah, he got mentioned during spring a couple of different times as having stood out and made some good progress. So, yeah, he's definitely a young guy to watch as well. And this will close it on out here from Sikkim Bears, $23 sign. Currently a starter, but will get beat out. Replaced is who?
Wow. You know, I this is really tough because there's really a lot of positions up in the air. So to say that someone's a truly locked in starter is probably not extremely accurate. I continue to look at that right tackle position, and I think it's more up in the air than maybe I've even mentioned. Like, I think Campbell Barrington is the starter right now. I think there's a good chance that he's the guy. I think he's good, but the question is he going to get beat out by a guy like Sidney Fugar or Colton Thomason? I think there's a lot of questions there, and then whichever of those guys ends up playing guard, I think they could win a starting job as well. So I think the offensive line is probably the area where those starters are just simply not locked in because they added so many guys during this post-spring period. So I do think there are some jobs up for grabs on the offensive line.
Yeah, that's where my concern lies. It kind of starts and stops with this team is the offensive line. And I think kind of how they go is how a lot of this will go this year. But they've added a lot of bodies. Added a couple of different coaches, finally have been able to settle in, and hopefully they can work some magic there with Mason Miller and this new crop of faces they've got, and then the young guys come along as well. And if they can hold up, then I think the ceiling grows exponentially for this football team with everything else that they have. So that will close out the mailbag this week. Thanks to the folks in there asking questions, as always. And do appreciate your contributions to the podcast and listening as well. So, man, with all that covered, anything before we head on out the door here?
I think that's pretty much it for today. We got a lot of news and notes to talk about. We'll continue talking about official visits and camps next weekend as well.
Yep, that is going to be kind of the theme of the next couple of weeks. And the rest of this month, really, will be camps and offers and hopefully commitments as well. So we'll dive all into that. And counting down the days, a month to go until media days and the unofficial start to the 2024 season. So let that excitement and anticipation build. But thanks to Garrett Ross behind the scenes, Grayson Grunhafer as always as well, and I'm Craig Smoke, and this has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com. Please hit that like and subscribe button, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.